We have gathered at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gaur Nittai and Srila Prabhupada on the most auspicious occasion of Sri Gaura Purnima. We have begun by chanting the holy names of the Lord in a most melodious way, which is the perfection of the celebration and the purpose for the Lord's descent as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, come in the mood and the role of a devotee to show us how to be devotees. He appeared on the full moon night of the Falgun month, during a lunar eclipse. And the system, according to Vedic principles, during an eclipse is that one should take bath in a holy river or pond and chant the holy names of the Lord. So from the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, there was chanting of the holy names. Thereafter, as a baby, of course, he's God, but he had his childhood pastimes. And during his pastimes, when he would cry, the elders would try to pacify him in different ways, but nothing would work. But soon they discovered that when they chanted the holy names, he would become peaceful and happy. So it became a regular occurrence that little Gaura would cry and the elders would pacify him by chanting. Today I would like to read two verses that the first verse explains what is possible by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the second verse explains the beauty of the Sankirtan movement. These verses are from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 2. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Text 1. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Vande Balopi Yad Anugrahat Tarannana Matagraha Vyaptam Siddhanta Sagaram. Translation. I offer my obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose mercy even an ignorant child can swim across the ocean of conclusive truth, which is full of the crocodiles of various theories. Indirectly, this verse explains how it's possible that I'm able to sit and speak here. purport by Srila Prabhupada. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even an inexperienced boy with no educational culture can be saved from the ocean of nescience, which is full of various types of philosophical doctrines that are like dangerous aquatic animals. The philosophy of the Buddha, the argumentative presentations of the Gyanis, the yoga systems of Patanjali and Gautama, and the systems of philosophers like Kanada, Kapila, and Dattatreya are dangerous creatures in the ocean of nescience. By the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can have real understanding of the essence of knowledge by avoiding these sectarian views and accepting the lotus feet of Krishna as the ultimate goal of life. Let us all worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for his gracious mercy to the conditioned souls. So, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita mentions that there are 26 qualities of a devotee. And one of these qualities is kavi, or poetic. And this verse and the next verse are filled with poetic metaphors. In the present verse, Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says that the ocean of conclusive truth, in Sanskrit or Bengali, Siddhanta, is difficult to cross. But if one is blessed by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even an inexperienced boy can cross it. And that ocean is filled with dangerous crocodiles. And obviously, if one wants to cross the ocean, he has to avoid the crocodiles. Otherwise, the crocodile will consume him. So the crocodiles are these various theories. And there are so many. Broadly, there's the philosophy of voidism of the Buddhists, for example. There's the philosophy of impersonalism of Shankaracharya and others. There are the philosophies of the yogis, such as Patanjali and Gautama. And there are the philosophies of the materialists, such as the atheistic Kapila. These same theories are prominent today. They may not be called by these names are placed in these categories by the same terminology, but the same principles are being espoused today. And even people who are materially intelligent are bewildered by these theories. They cannot distinguish the actual truth from these false doctrines or sectarian doctrines. But even an inexperienced child who has received the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can understand conclusive truth, cross the ocean of conclusive truth, and avoid the crocodiles of various theories. Srila Prabhupada's secretary at one stage, Shamsundar Prabhu and his wife Malati, had a daughter named Saraswati. Saraswati, at the age of 4 or 5, was preaching Krishna consciousness to big adults, very learned and aristocratic and cultured adults. When they would come to visit Srila Prabhupada, or when Srila Prabhupada would hold a program with hundreds and thousands of people, she would go up to a gentleman or any person and say, "Do you know who is Krishna?" And then she would answer, "Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And what she said was the absolute truth. Karmis, jnanis, yogis, they don't know that simple truth. But that small child did, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his representative, Srila Prabhupada. Even in India, so many people tell me that before they came in touch with Krishna consciousness, they were confused. They couldn't discern what the ultimate goal of life was or how to achieve it. They couldn't distinguish who was the ultimate object of worship. They're confused. Many people are confused. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh. They couldn't understand who is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's only by the association of Srila Prabhupada's followers, Srila Prabhupada and his followers, that they could understand. So this is practical. And even, as Prabhupada said, an inexperienced boy without culture can challenge a learned scholar. There was an instance where there's a big atheist in Sri Lanka. In fact, he founded some society of atheists, Dr. Kabur. So he put out a challenge that something like, if anyone can prove the existence of God, you know, he'll give them so much money. And one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, who was in Sri Lanka at the time, challenged him to prove that there is no God. And they engaged in a debate in the newspapers, back and forth. And Srila Prabhupada's disciple, who I believe hadn't even graduated from high school, really defeated this big atheist, you know, who had a PhD and all sorts of academic credentials, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. There are many examples. His Holiness Bhakti Srup Damodar Goswami Maharaj, who's a student at the University of California at Irvine, and some big Nobel laureate, came and gave a lecture how life is produced by a combination of three chemicals, nitrogen, hydrogen, and ammonia, or something, I don't remember. And he, you know, wrote all these big diagrams and formulas on the board, and he's just expounded on his theory, for which he had won a Nobel Prize. And Bhakti Srup Damodar Maharaj raised his hand and challenged him. He said, if I give you these three chemicals, can you produce life? And the professor said, that I cannot say. So, this is practical. This is practical. And we should not be afraid to speak the truth. We're meant to speak the truth. Satyam, that's another quality of a devotee. It's truthful. Of course, it is also said, Satyam Priyam, that one should speak truth in a palatable way. Of course, if one is in a position of authority, one doesn't have to follow that principle of Satyam Priyam. One can just speak the truth to one's student or disciple. But with others who are not one's disciple, one generally would follow the principle of Satyam Priyam. Speak truth in a way that is palatable. So now we come to the next verse. Krishna kirtana gana nartana kala pato jani brajita sad bhakta valiham sachakra madupa Shreni viharaspadam Karna nandi kaladvanir vahatume Jiva maru prangane Sri Chaitanya dayanide tavalasau Lila sudasvarduni. Translation. O my merciful Lord Chaitanya, may the nectarian Ganges waters of your transcendental activities flow on the surface of my desert-like tongue. Beautifying these waters are the lotus flowers of singing, dancing, and loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which are the pleasure abodes of unalloyed devotees. These devotees are compared to swans, ducks, and bees. The river's flowing produces a melodious sound that gladdens their ears. So let's try to comprehend this beautiful metaphor. The nectarian Ganges waters are the transcendental activities of Lord Chaitanya. And what is that water beautified by? Lotus flowers. And what are those lotus flowers? Singing the holy names of Krishna and dancing. And those lotus flowers are the pleasure abodes of swans, ducks, and bees. The swans and ducks and bees go to the lotus flowers to enjoy nectar, enjoy the nectar of singing and dancing and chanting the holy names. And the flowing of the river of Lord Chaitanya's activities produces a melodious sound that engladdens the ears of these swans, ducks, and bees who are devotees. In other words, we are swimming in a flow of nectar. We're swimming in a flow of nectar. And within that flow of nectar are these lotus flowers, consisting of singing the glories of the Lord, dancing and loudly chanting the holy names of the Lord. And by taking residence in these lotus flowers, our ears and hearts are engladdened. And the whole combination of the flowing of the river produces a very melodious sound. That's what the verse says. Here's what the purport says. Our tongues always engage in vibrating useless sounds that do not help us realize transcendental peace. In other words, this is polite language. Basically, what Srila Prabhupada is saying is that our tongues always engage in speaking nonsense that agitates our minds. The tongue is compared to a desert because a desert needs a constant supply of refreshing water to make it fertile and fruitful. Water is the substance most needed in the desert. The transient pleasure derived from mundane topics of art, culture, politics, sociology, dry philosophy, poetry, and so on. And today we might give special mention to economics, is compared to a mere drop of water Because although such topics have a qualitative feature of transcendental pleasure, they are saturated with the modes of material nature. Therefore, neither collectively nor individually can they satisfy the vast requirements of the desert-like tongue. Yes, without Krishna consciousness, without Krishna katha, without Gaur Lila, our tongues are like a desert. And that desert needs huge quantities of water to become fertile and fruitful. One drop of water is not going to do any good. It's not going to make any difference. So the pleasure that one gets from these other topics are compared to drops of water. They're not enough to quench the thirst. They're not enough to make the desert fertile and fruitful. And they're transient. That little bit of happiness, it does not last long. So we need rivers of water. And the river is, what's the river? The pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. Activities of Lord Chaitanya. Despite crying in various conferences, the desert-like tongue continues to be parched. Various conferences could refer to the United Nations, different summit conferences, parliaments, legislatures, whatever. Despite crying in various conferences, the desert-like tongue continues to be parched. For this reason, people from all parts of the world must call for the devotees of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's what they should do in the UN, in the great parliaments and assemblies of the world. They should call the devotees of Lord Chaitanya. That's really what they should do. Otherwise, they don't have a clue. Who are compared to swans swimming around the beautiful lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or bees humming around his lotus feet in transcendental pleasure, searching for honey. The dryness of material happiness cannot be moistened by so-called philosophers who cry for Brahman, liberation, and similar dry speculative objects. So not only does the tongue remain parched by the crying for material advancement in different categories of, you know, sociology, politics, economics, art, culture, and so on, it also remains parched despite the crying of various, you know, gyanis and yogis who are crying for realization of Brahman, impersonal. The soul can be solaced only by the urge of the soul proper is different. In other words, the soul doesn't desire material adjustment or impersonal liberation. It want something else. Actually, last weekend I was in San Jose, and yesterday I spent some time with Vaisheshika Prabhu, and he gave a very good example of how material adjustment never works. The example is that you're wearing a sweater and you feel too hot. So you take the sweater off. Your host, being very attentive, perceives that you're feeling hot and turns the heat down. Then you feel cold, so you put your sweater back on. And your host, perceiving that you're feeling cold, turns the temperature up. I had that very experience in the car on the way from San Jose to Santa Barbara. I was feeling too hot, so I took my sweater off. And my attentive driver, seeing that I was too hot, turned the temperature down, and I was cold for the rest of the ride. But, because I was chanting Hare Krishna, I didn't mind. Too much. And in personal liberation, Kaivalya Narakayate, for a devotee, that's hellish. In fact, hell is better than in personal liberation, because at least in hell you can chant and dance. In personal Brahman, you can't do anything. The urge of the soul proper is different. The soul can be solaced only by the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his many bona fide devotees who never leave the lotus feet of the Lord to become imitation Mahaprabhus. There are a few of those around. But all cling to his lotus feet like bees that never leave a honey-soaked lotus flower. Lord Chaitanya's movement of Krishna consciousness is full of dancing and singing about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. It is compared herein to the pure waters of the Ganges, which are full of lotus flowers. The Krishna consciousness movement is being compared to the pure waters of the Ganges, which are full of lotus flowers, which are chanting and dancing. The enjoyers of these lotus flowers are the pure devotees, who are like bees and swans. They chant like the flowing of the Ganges, the river of the celestial kingdom. The author desires such sweetly flowing waves to cover his tongue. He humbly compares himself to materialistic persons who always engage in dry talk from which they derive no satisfaction. If they were to use their dry tongues to chant the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As exemplified by Lord Chaitanya, they would taste sweet nectar and enjoy life. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes?
Is there nothing worthwhile from the Yoga Sutras?
We didn't say that. There are drops. There are drops. Now, I might mention that there are degrees of realization of Krishna consciousness. And many of the statements that we're reading are spoken from the platform of high realization. When one has actually realized the beauty of Krishna consciousness, then these other things are like insignificant drops. Obviously, most people who begin the process of Krishna consciousness are not on the highest platform, and therefore they're prone to discuss other topics. If they were relishing the nectar that's described here, they wouldn't have much interest in other topics. But by cultivating the practices of pure devotional service and avoiding other activities that, from the spiritual point of view, are quite useless, one can make better progress. One can make better progress. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told the story of the wedding party. You know, in India, marriages are like a big occasion where all the members of the bride's family and host all the members of the groom's family. So, in this particular case, the wedding was to take place on the other side of the river. It was a big, it was a long journey to that place. So the members of the wedding party got on the boat at night. It was going to be an overnight journey. And went to sleep. And in the morning they expected to have reached their destination, but they had not gone anywhere. So they began to abuse, or maybe that's not a good term, began to blame the boatman. That, you haven't taken us anywhere. You slept all night. You didn't row the boat. You just slept. Said, no, I was rowing all night. Well, if you were rowing all night, why didn't we get anywhere? Why are we in the same place where we started? And eventually, someone found the reason, that he hadn't taken the anchor out. He spent the whole night rowing, but he didn't get anywhere because he had left the anchor in. Now, it happens that many devotees, many or some or however, many or few, they chant, they read the scripture, they follow the regulative principles, they put in effort, but they don't get very far. They don't really make much progress spiritually. And the reason is because they they are anchored by their material desires. So to really make progress, one has to give up his material desires and attachments. Otherwise, like, straining, oh man, another 16 rounds, another day following the principles. He's not getting anywhere. Because he's holding on to his material attachments and desires. But if we let go of those, then we can make quick progress and we can relish. And relish very quickly. That's one of the offenses against the holy name, maintain material attachments, even in spite of hearing so many instructions. It's not an offense to have them, because we all begin with them, but it's an offense to maintain them. And it's so hard to maintain them. There's creation, maintenance, and destruction. You know, Brahma creates, Shiva destroys, and Vishnu maintains. Only Vishnu can maintain. Everyone knows maintenance is most difficult. It's easier to create something than to maintain it. It's still easier to destroy it. The maintenance is so difficult. So, to maintain our material desires and material attachments is hard work. Why should we put in that work to maintain our material desires? We should put that effort into maintaining our Krishna consciousness, our spiritual progress. Yes.
Doesn't the devotee get help from Krishna and Guru to let go of his material desires?
Saying, doesn't the devotee get help from Guru and Krishna to let go of his material desires? He does. He does. This is like special mercy, in other words. You need special mercy. I've told this story before, but still, I will repeat it. Srila Prabhupada had a friend in Delhi who had the habit of smoking. So when the man came to meet Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada asked him whether he had given up smoking. The man looked down, he said, no, Srila Prabhupada, I haven't been able to. Can't I get some special mercy? And Srila Prabhupada replied, special mercy? Yes, there is such a thing as special mercy. Yasyaham anugrinami harishye taddanam shanai. Lord Krishna says that when He's especially mercifully inclined to a devotee, the first installment of his special mercy is that he takes everything away from the devotee. Then the devotee suffers. He's, say, in the case of wealth, he suffers because he becomes poor. But he suffers doubly because of all of his friends and family members who used to respect him don't care for him anymore. So he suffers doubly. And then Krishna says that if he tries to build it up again, he'll take it away again. And if he tries to build it up again, he'll take it away again. Until the person gives up, and surrenders to Krishna. surrenders to Krishna means, it's described in the Bhagavatam that he will take shelter of Krishna's devotees. By taking shelter of Krishna's devotees, we're able to surrender to Krishna. Now this is not... Yeah, it was sort of humorous in the exchange between Srila Prabhupada and the smoker. But this is not a joke. You know, this is a reality. And that is the mercy of Krishna on a weak devotee who's unable to give up material attachments by his own strength. Of course, the devotee may be weak, but at the same time, you know, he must be sincere. If he's not sincere, then Krishna takes away his material attachments. He'll, you know, chase after them and leave Krishna. You know, that's... But if he's sincere, he'll stay with Krishna. You know, even if Krishna takes away his objects of material attachment. And that really is the Lord's special mercy. It really is. And when one experiences it, one, you know, is able to taste nectar and enjoy life. Really. Any other questions or comments?
Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Does this mean he is like the fullest expression of Godhead, being both the masculine and the feminine together?
There's different ways of seeing, and you know, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya, there's no difference between Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna. So, from that point of view, you could say yes, he's the same as Radha and Krishna, and Radha and Krishna is the complete manifestation of Godhead. But when a similar question was asked of Srila Prabhupada, he gave a little different answer. That was when Achyutananda Swami met our landlord in Calcutta, Mr. Singh Rai. And Mr. Singh Rai, he had that idea. There were two parts to it. One is that Lord Chaitanya is the origin of Radha and Krishna, and the other is that he's greater than Radha and Krishna. So Chutananda Swami asked Srila Prabhupada, oh yeah, and he said like that that Lord Chaitanya is like Rasagula, which is made of milk and sugar, but it's better than either milk or sugar. So Achyutananda Swami asked Srila Prabhupada, that is it true that Lord Chaitanya is the origin of Radha and Krishna? He said no. He said the same example, that the milk and sugar exist first and then they combine to become Rasagula. And then he asked, well, who is greater? And Srila Prabhupada paused for a moment. And he said, Radharani. Radharani is the greatest. And he pointed to a picture on the wall that showed Radharani on a higher platform and Krishna sort of kneeling at her feet, trying to please her, win her favor. He said, Radharani is the greatest. But then he pointed to another picture in which Baby Krishna was carrying Nanda Maharaj's slippers on his head. And then Prabhupada said the devotee is greater. Because Krishna's carrying his devotee's slippers on his head. But I think either or both could be true, so the real thing is to be attracted to them, either Radha and Krishna or Lord Chaitanya, or and really make them the goal of our life. And if your goal is Radha and Krishna, then you'll definitely take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, because by his mercy you can reach Radha and Krishna. And if you take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, then you'll end up with Radha and Krishna. I think Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that if you take bath in the waters of the ghats of Navadvip, you'll come up in the ghats of Vrindavan. We have to immerse ourselves. Any other questions or comments? Shamananda Prabhu.
I was thinking that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he is the source of intelligence. So I was wondering, why would the Lord provide someone an intelligence to write these this useless other philosophies like Mayavada philosophies or Buddhist philosophies? Why would the Lord give them intelligence which would lead them in the wrong path?
That is a very good question. There is a purpose. And the purpose is to protect the confidentiality of pure devotional service, so that only the most sincere come to Krishna. Otherwise, if other people come, they'll just disturb him. It said that Krishna was actually very pleased with Shankaracharya that he made the Mayavada philosophy so bewildering. Because only someone who's very sincere will be able to cross beyond it and come to Krishna. Like Prabhupada, it's maybe not the best example, but Prabhupada wanted to preach. He wanted people to come to Krishna consciousness. But he still had a secretary to screen people and say, well, Prabhupada wants everyone to become Krishna conscious. Why should he have a secretary to screen people? Sometimes you need a secretary because insincere people come. Doesn't mean you don't want them to become Krishna conscious, but if they're insincere, they're just going to waste your time. Not just waste your time, they could actually cause a bit of a disturbance. So all these are different theories are there to mislead people who want to be misled, ultimately. If you're sincere, if you don't want to be misled, you can't be. It's like the cheaters and the cheated. If you want to be cheated, you'll get a teacher who cheats you. If you're sincere, you get a teacher who's sincere. Is that all right? Because to Krishna Prabhu.
So how should one respond to these various circumstances for the benefit of oneself as well as in relationship with others?
Good question. I actually thought of commenting on it when I was reading the purport, but I just went with the flow. In the preface to Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada explains that despite so much advancement in education and technology, there's still a pinprick in the social body, because in spite of so much material advancement, there's so much fighting. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the reason is that there's no common cause. You know, the Muslims have their cause, and the, say, Hindus have their cause, and they fight. Employers have their cause, and the workers have their cause, and they fight. So Srila Prabhupada said we need a common cause that is so great that it can be everyone's cause. And the common cause is provided in Srimad Bhagavatam, Janmadiyasiyataha. Krishna. Krishna is the origin of everything, and therefore everyone, he's the cause of all causes, and he's the cause that everyone can unite behind and support. So that's the truth. That's the truth. It's not sectarian. People may call the absolute truth by different names, but Srimad Bhagavatam gives the clearest conception. It's not that we're saying that other conceptions are wrong, but they're just maybe more vague. And as far as the holier-than-thou attitude, that's... we, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada, we have the knowledge, but we haven't realized it. I mean, if we did realize it, we'd be humble. But if we have the tendency to be proud because we have some knowledge that other people don't have, we should consider that, we have the knowledge, but how much have we realized of the knowledge? How much are we actually following of the process? So we can feel like the peon. You know, we don't have any qualification. We don't have any assets. We're just delivering the message as it is. Personally, we're poor. As far as people misunderstanding us and thinking that we're sectarian, it's a matter of preaching. It's a matter of how we present ourselves. It's a matter of who our audience is. Prabhupada was very bold, but he had realization, he had age, he had culture, And at the time, people may have had a little different mood. You know, they might have been looking for that clear, authoritative answer. But actually, that's what people want. But they just become cynical. They think like, well, it could be either. They're cynical and they think no one has the answer. No one person has the answer. Or they're insincere. They pretend that they're seeking for the truth, but they don't really want to know the truth because they don't want to surrender. And then I didn't plan to do this, but I think I will. During the kirtan, this very sweet, melodious kirtan, I was getting some messages from the altar. And this was the first message. Guru is everything. Without Guru, there is no spiritual life. One's practices can help one become eligible for spiritual life, but actual spiritual life begins with Guru. So I think what we're doing in yoga circles, for example, is we're giving people practices that will help them become eligible. We're getting them to chant. We're getting them to hear some of the philosophy. You know, we're getting them to become vegetarian. We're helping them to become qualified for spiritual life. But actual spiritual life begins with Guru, with surrender to Guru. You know, I've spoken with Satchinandan Swami, and that's his point, that there are very few people now that are qualified for actual spiritual life, just by hearing the truth, you know, by hearing the philosophy will take to it. And if we care about others besides those few, then we'll want to do something for them as well. And what we do for them will be more indirect, or maybe not even indirect. The elements will be direct, but they'll be mixed with other things that are not pure devotional service. But by the chanting, by hearing the philosophy, by understanding parts of the philosophy, by becoming vegetarian, by taking prasad, by serving devotees, they get pious credits, and the pious credits will help them come to the stage where they can ultimately surrender and take to the process. But the real process begins with surrender. And until they come to the point of surrender, they're just, you know, becoming qualified, gaining credits to help them become qualified to surrender. Surrender means Guru. Guru means speaks the truth without compromise. Sadhu. Guru. Guru means heavy. Sadhu means to cut. then their real spiritual life begins. But how, so few are qualified for that now, that's why we do these other things, to help them become qualified. Yes, Shyamananda Prabhu.
You give all respect to others and then not expect anything in return. At the same time, be humble properly, that without discriminating, that okay, Vaishnava I'll tolerate, and Vaishnava I don't need to tolerate.
No, in general, our mood should be Chinadapi Suni Chinantara PC Anina Manadena Kitanya Sadhara. I mean, we've had this discussion on occasion. Some devotees feel in the workplace, if you're humble and tolerant, people will take advantage of you, and you know, they'll keep you down while they go up. And then some devotees have cited instances whereby being humble, they actually went up, and the people that were being aggressive got left behind. But I think that principle is a general principle for bhajan. But as far as a work, it would vary according to one's work. For a Brahmin, it would be a good principle, but for a Kshatriya has to enforce discipline, you know. The quality that defines a Brahmin and beautifies a Brahmin is forgiveness. But Prabhupada said a Kshatriya can't forgive. If he forgives the miscreants, there will be no discipline in the state. So it would vary according to one's occupation and one's association.
The British rule, or anywhere in any other part of the world at the time, in other position, what did they go back to Vaikuntha?
In a sense, the question is, what does it mean to be liberated by the Lord's mercy? Being liberated does not necessarily mean, in this context, it doesn't necessarily mean being established in one's constitutional position and service to the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. It can mean being liberated from material desires and continuing the process of Krishna consciousness. In the case of Hiranyakashipu, when Nrisimhadeva asked Prahlad to take some benediction, and eventually said he wanted his father to be purified, and Nrisimhadeva replied that, you know, he's already been purified. And not only him, but 7 times 3 generations of your family will all be purified because of your pure devotion. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that even though Hiranyakasipu was purified by the touch of the Lord, he still had to take one more birth as a devotee before he could go back to Godhead.